Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hunting for Truth by Philippa Norcross and Michael Anderle. Narrated by Patricia Santomasso. Chapter 1.
How do you manage to run in this much snow?
Cora shouted into the flurry of snowflakes that whirled past her face. Several caught in the strands of brown hair that had escaped her toque and scarf. Being a vampire apparently didn't keep you from getting cold, much to her disappointment, and she was sure it would have been very picturesque if she hadn't also been puffing with exertion and otherwise entirely covered in snow. Jack, several meters away from her, laughed gaily.
"You'll get the hang of it," he called back,
and he scampered away into the knee-deep and, in places, waist-deep snow. She growled under her breath and tried to follow. Her coach, Jack Wall, was having altogether too much fun. The sheer amount of glee he was exuding at having her chase him around the snow squall was only a step away from infuriating. She was only keeping her temper in check thanks to long years spent going one slow step at a time in the classical music industry. Long years where she hadn't gotten very far, but she had learned to cultivate patience. The jaunty young man up ahead of her in the snow seemed to have infinite patience. Jack Wall was a vampire, and had been for almost a century now, making him somewhere in the range of 150 years old. He was officially her trainer, which meant it was his job to teach her not only how to use her new vampiric magic, but also how to use her super strength and super speed, which were technically offshoots of the same energy manipulation magic, somehow. Cora still got headaches when she tried to pay attention to Jack's lessons on magical theory, but she was trying. He was not, however, the person who had turned Cora into a vampire. That had been Madame Ivanova Antonova, the matriarch of the Russian branch of the Gens Antony, a vampire dynasty that had existed for many centuries, possibly over two millennia, if she'd understood Antonova's oblique historical references correctly. Antonova herself was multiple centuries old, and if she'd been circumspect about how old the Antonov family was, she'd been downright tight-lipped about how old she was. Cora hadn't been able to pin it down beyond possibly somewhere between 5 and 8 centuries. A few weeks ago, Cora had been struggling through a boring life as a barista in a little town in Ontario, eking out an existence and pretending she was planning to make another go at being an opera singer once her mother was able to take care of herself again. She'd been stuck in the same rut since her mother had caught COVID, and Cora's own endless migraines had only made everything 100 times worse. Then had come the cancer diagnosis. Stage 4 incurable and inoperable brain cancer. And Cora's life had completely changed in the course of only a couple weeks. She'd gone coast to coast, first to the Pacific Northwest, then to the Gulf of Mexico seeking treatment, and had ended up at Antonov Hall on the recommendation of the clinic she'd landed at. Because the only cure for her cancer, if you could call it a cure, was vampirism. She'd hemmed and hawed, and she'd tried yet more treatments. She'd railed against the idea of becoming a vampire, one of the most feared and hated creatures in both the magical and amagical worlds. She'd been teetering on the brink of deciding one way or the other when she'd gotten word that her boyfriend, Matthew St. Clair, a wolf shifter from Joseph's Landing, and one of the sweetest guys you'd ever meet, had died in a car accident. That had pushed her over the edge. She'd decided she wasn't ready to die, so she'd taken the plunge. Much like she was doing now, in the snow, trying her damnedest to follow Jack, who also happened to be an assassin in the employ of Madame Antonova, who essentially ran an assassin's guild, in addition to functioning as a high society impresario. Jack was purportedly teaching her tracking this morning, though you could have fooled Cora. She didn't think she'd manage to track anything, not even her own footsteps. She was pretty sure she'd seen the same copse of trees a dozen times by now, despite her conviction that she'd been trying to follow Jack in a straight line. It really was a testament to how poorly suited Cora was to be an assassin that she didn't notice Jack was coming up beside her until he poked her shoulder and she jumped a foot.
Jesus!
She yelped, leaping to the side and falling in the snow. Jack's lips twitched as he held himself back from laughing, and he reached down to help her up.
Sorry, you were real lost in thought there. Something on your mind?
Cora grumbled as she brushed herself off. Only that I'm about the worst person you could pick to be an assassin.
Who says you're going to be an assassin?
Jack raised an eyebrow. I mean, I thought it was sort of a given, she responded, furrows etching her forehead. Or at least expected. Like, I don't know, some sort of thank you to Madame Antonova for saving my life. I would have to join the family business. Of course, now that she said it all out loud, she felt a bit silly. She shoved her hands in her pockets and looked down, ducking her head into her collar. Her face was turning red, and this time it wasn't just from the cold. When we came back to Russia so quickly after going back to Texas, I figured I was getting fast-tracked or something. I don't know. I didn't know how to ask, and didn't feel like I should. Jack stood back a little and crossed his arms, regarding her.
Jeez, Cora. If I'd known you were feeling so sour about it, we would have talked earlier.
I'm not sour, she protested. I'm just frustrated, I guess. I'm not good at this, and I don't know why we keep doing it.
Because whatever you end up doing with them, you still need to understand your powers,
Jack replied.
Suddenly having super strength and super speed really tends to mess people up if they're not ready for it. Madam's found, over the years, that having someone there to help train the new vampires really makes a difference in their well-being.
Cora sighed. I guess that makes sense. Jack thought for a moment.
Let's hunt some rabbits.
She tilted her head. I thought you said we didn't need to drink blood more than every once in a while, like every couple days or whatever. We had some this morning. Why hunt the rabbits?
It's more fun than trying to chase me around Hell's Half Acre, he teased her. But we don't necessarily have to catch and drink from them. After all, you won't always have to hunt your own blood. You should be able to, so you can do it when you're starving and alone in the wilderness. But how often will that happen?
Cora raised an eyebrow at him. Well, based on my time as a vampire so far, Jack laughed.
Touché, touché. Well, come on, let's just have a little fun. Let loose, Cora, see what you can do.
She grumbled, then took a breath and let it out. At some point, she was going to have to figure this out, and it was probably better to do so in a safe environment with a coach, even.
Watch me first, Jack advised. See that rabbit over there? I'm going to slip up behind it, catch it, then release it.
Cora looked where he was pointing. She could barely make out the tall ears of the rabbit Jack had spotted. They were a very pale gray, almost the same color as the snow. If not for her newly sharp vampire eyes, she'd never have seen it. Jack took off, running through the snow so quickly that he was almost a blur, and silent too. She couldn't help but think of the elves from the Lord of the Rings running along the top of the snowbank. Could she do that? Well, no. Jack was running through the snow, not on top of it. But he was fast. The rabbit he'd pointed out had to have been at least a couple hundred meters away, and he was nearing it in less than 10 seconds. He dove, arms outstretched, and came up with the wriggling rabbit in his hands. He lifted it victoriously, laughed once, then let it go. It scampered away. Cora wasn't sure what exactly she was supposed to have gleaned from this display. Maybe the angle at which Jack had attacked the rabbit? He'd come around in a big arc, like a banana. Did it have to do with the wind? Coming from a certain direction so that the rabbit couldn't smell him? She sighed. She'd spotted another rabbit at a similar distance to the first, and Jack was looking at her expectantly. Well, she'd have to try eventually. She took a step, and then another. Fuck, she wasn't even entirely sure how to make the magic work. It wasn't like she suddenly just walked faster. She had to tap into it somehow. Abruptly, she found herself three steps ahead of where she'd expected. And then, another three. And then the world was flowing by her like the landscape outside a train, and she couldn't keep up. She'd lost sight of the rabbit entirely. All she could see now was snow and trees, and even those were really just white and brown blurs. She vaguely felt herself crash through something that scraped at her coat and arm. She must have run into a tree, or at least a branch, and the super strength meant that it just snapped in two, or 12. Maybe it had shattered. Jesus, she was scaring herself. What couldn't she do? Her sudden panic meant she had even less attention to pay to her surroundings, especially the ground underneath the snow, which was easily up to her knees. She thought she saw a patch of grass over to her right, a spot where the snow wasn't as thick, but before she could focus on turning in that direction, her foot hit an exposed tree root and she went flying. She plowed through the snow on her stomach, ending up with not only a face full, but a collar full of snow. When she came to a halt, she would have sworn she'd scooped snow all the way down her coat to her waist. She felt so cold. Cora did her best to lever herself out, but she wasn't even sure which way was up anymore. And when she felt Jack's hand on her arm, pulling her up out of the snowbank, she came up with eyes full of angry tears, which froze on her cheeks as soon as they overflowed her eyelids.
I am useless, she complained bitterly. I am never going to get this. I should be one of those vampires that just locks themselves up in a library and pretends they don't exist.
Aw, Cora, it'll be okay, he assured her, pulling her in for a hug despite her thick layer of snow.
You'll get the hang of it, I promise. It always takes a while.
Her teeth started to chatter.
God, I hope you're right.
I've trained dozens. I haven't been wrong yet. How about we go in and have some cocoa?
She let her head fall to his chest, cushioned by her toque and his coat.
That sounds like the best idea you've had all day.
Chapter 2. The next morning, Cora did her best not to eat her cheese blintzes sullenly, but it was a near thing. The rolled, filled pancakes were incredibly tasty. That wasn't the problem. Neither was the blackberry compote that had been spooned over the top. That was also amazing. The perfect mix of tart and sweet. No, breakfast was delicious. Almost as delicious as the contents of the cup that sat to the right of her plate. A small cup, a mug without a handle, a stemless goblet, but not made of glass, made of clay. A hand-thrown hand bowl. A beautiful piece of work. Gifted to Madame, Jack had said, just like the compote and so many other things in the cottage. A cup of blood. Half full. Maybe half a cup total. 125 milliliters. Not even half a pint. A quarter of a pint? She'd never been very good with quarts and pints. There was something called a gill. I thought I didn't have to drink blood more than once every few days. She threw a glance at Jack, and an even quicker one at Madame Antonova.
You must replenish your stores an equal measure with what you have used, Antonova replied.
It might have been Cora's imagination, but the matriarch's tone sounded oh so slightly curt. Was Cora getting on her nerves that much? Oh, sorry. She blushed, picked up the cup, and sipped it. The taste of iron burst over her tongue and flooded her senses, rapidly followed by the surge of magical energy as she swallowed. After she'd taken another couple of sips, Cora felt much better. Less brain-fogged, much less grumpy. Sorry, she repeated, looking down at the cup. I guess I'm still not used to how much I, need this stuff. Jack chuckled faintly.
It's okay, Cora. Everyone gets a little touchy when they're hungry.
I guess. Still, no need to be rude. Cora put the cup down and started back in on the blintzes, which were much more enjoyable now that she wasn't hangry.
My apologies. What are we going to do today?
More training? I thought we might do some more hunting. Maybe some sparring in the amphitheater?
Cora grimaced. Fun. Antonova's eyes flashed as she caught Cora's gaze.
Your powers must be mastered before you may return to society,
she reminded Cora, a note of steel behind the friendly reminder. Yes, I know, Cora replied, somewhat testily, though she tried to hide the irritation in another bite of pancake. But I keep telling you, I'm not suddenly going to become a master in a few days. Certainly not to your level, and probably not even to Jack's. I really just want to go find out what happened to Matt. I don't need to be an assassin to do that. Antonova exhaled through her nose, an affectation that Cora had learned in the last few days meant that she was sighing with exasperation and didn't want to be obvious about it. It set Cora's teeth on edge.
Perhaps not.
The matriarch sounded rather arch if you asked Cora.
But you do need to be able to use them without tripping over your own feet.
Cora growled in the back of her throat, averting her eyes. So much for being less grumpy. Maybe if we weren't starting with outdoor training, or maybe going with baby steps a little more suited to someone who's never done anything like this before in her life. Antonova narrowed her eyes.
Or you could stop feeling sorry for yourself, Maya Mille, and trust to our decades of experience in training new vampires. We do know what we're doing,
Jack put in mildly, sitting back in his chair with a blintz in hand.
Just going to leave that there.
Cora huffed. I have no doubt that you know what you're doing, and I'm not feeling sorry for myself. I'm struggling, and you don't seem to care. But I guess I shouldn't be surprised by that. I suppose being an ice queen for a few centuries might make you lose some empathy for us mere mortals.
Okay, let's take a break,
Jack suggested abruptly, pulling Cora away from the table.
No need.
Antonova rose in one smooth, majestic motion and left the table and then the cottage. After the wooden door clacked shut, closing out the cold and snow of the Russian morning, Cora took a deep breath and let it out in a great growling sigh.
Oh my God, I feel like I'm PMSing the worst I ever have in my life. I swear I'm not this much of a bitch all the time. But also, what the hell? I don't need to learn this shit. I don't. Why can't I just go home?
Jack, who had let go of Cora's hand as Antonova left the cottage, let Cora rant. Once she was done, slumping back into her chair with another half-hearted grump, he said,
You need to show her that you have control over your powers.
He held up a hand to stem Cora's impending frustrated tirade.
And no, that doesn't mean you need to suddenly become an assassin. It means that you need to be able to recognize when you need blood. That you know how to use your powers without being overpowered by them yourself. If you don't know those things, Cora, it's not safe for you to go home. If you don't know how to use your powers without losing control, then you'll burn through magical energy much quicker than you expect. And if you don't know how to recognize when you need blood, you'll go too long, and it'll be harder to resist going after humans.
See? That's sensible, Cora complained, glaring at him. Why didn't you guys lead with that? I still don't understand why we have to do it with assassin training, but at least that makes sense.
Because this is fast and efficient, Jack explained. It pushes you to your limits quickly, meaning you find them faster. Then you can scale back. And in the first few weeks after being turned, everything's more intense. If we tried to go slowly, your body might throw you curveballs that we aren't expecting. This way, we get to call the shots a little more obviously.
Cora glared at him a moment or two longer, then deflated with a sigh.
Why the hell didn't you tell me all of this in the first place?
Jack shrugged.
That one, I'll own. I've been doing this for so long, I didn't really think about it. Plus, I will say that for some reason, most of the people I've trained haven't questioned it. So, my apologies for that.
He chuckled and sat back in his chair, putting his hands behind his head.
Maybe it's just that Madam's always found me the assassins to be, and so I haven't bothered figuring anything else out.
Cora was somewhat mollified by this and settled down. She took another sip of blood and closed her eyes as the warmth suffused her.
I'm assuming I have to drink this whole thing?
Best that you do,
Jack recommended.
Madam's usually pretty good at estimating how much a new vampire will need in their first few weeks. She has been doing this for a very long time.
Cora opened her eyes again, warmth of a different kind filling her cheeks. I was kinda rude, wasn't I?
Hardly the rudest anyone's ever been to Madam, but yes, you were,
he confirmed.
You probably want to apologize. She does get it, mind you. We were all baby vampires once, and the toll it takes on your mind is more than most people believe. It would certainly be the polite thing to do, though.
She nodded. I'll do so when she comes back. I'd rather not try to follow her.
Given how your tracking skills are coming along, you might not find her,
Jack teased, and patted her on the forearm when she shot him a look.
You'll get it. You're right. This sort of thing is very far removed from what you're used to. But once you figure it out...
He took a deep breath and sighed, his eyes falling shut and his face relaxing.
It's like sinking into a warm bath. Everything feels right. And you'll get there, Cora. I promise.
Cora didn't respond. Instead, staring into the last mouthful or two of blood in her cup. Eventually, Jack said,
Have you given any more thought to telling your mother and sister?
Aunt Cora's vaguely melancholic expression transformed into a scowl.
No.
The line made her teeth ache. Her newly grown fangs, even.
No, I haven't. You shouldn't wait too long on it.
Jack's eyes were still closed, and his expression hadn't changed. But Cora felt the warning underneath.
The longer you wait, the harder it'll be. And the more stories they'll tell themselves while you wait. Even if you don't intend to ever get back in touch with them, it's good to have closure for everyone involved.
Cora squirmed in her seat, then downed the rest of the cup in a gulp that burned on the way down. She looked at the remaining morsels of breakfast on her plate and found, to her regret, that she really didn't feel like eating them. I just don't know what to say.
Join the club,
Jack replied. And the lament in his voice made Cora look up. He finally opened his eyes and met hers.
Some people are lucky. They get turned in circumstances that leave them with no family, and then they have precious few people to tell, if any. Sometimes they get turned so close to death that everyone they know and love already thinks they're dead. And then all they have to decide is whether to tell their families that they're not dead.
Cora grimaced. Is it bad that I wish that's what had happened to me? This would be all so much easier that way.
You'd think so, but it's not the case,
Jack countered.
That's what happened to me. I was turned on the brink of death. Not one, but 2 feet in the grave. Just about 6 feet under. My fiancé and my parents thought I was dead, and I couldn't tell them. Maybe if I'd moved on right away, moved to a different town... It wouldn't have hurt so bad, but I didn't. Instead, I watched as my beloved Cecily pined for me.
He was looking at the front door now, a hard, sad set to his jaw.
My ma didn't fare much better. My pa, he got mad. It wasn't anyone's fault I died, really, but he sure seemed to take it personally.
Were they magical? Would they have understood if you'd told them?
Jack barked a laugh. Barely. Well, Ma was. Just enough to play tricks, she used to say. But Pa didn't know. In fact, he was a preacher. Probably would have burned me and Ma both at the stake if I'd come back and told them I was a vampire.
They all died without knowing I'd lived. Pa died first. I thought about telling Ma, but the shock would have killed her by then. And Cecily had long since moved on to a new life.
He looked at Cora suddenly, and Cora drew back at his intensity. It was like being skewered with a toothpick.
I couldn't tell the ones I loved, and I watched them ache for not knowing. I've carried that grief with me for a century. Don't do that to yourself or to them, Cora. Just don't.
Cora couldn't tear her eyes off him for a long moment, and when she finally did... She mumbled something about needing to study and awkwardly crossed to the other side of the cabin,
where she buried herself in the book of vampire history she was supposed to be reading in her downtime. Antonova had said something about a test, something else for Cora to fail at, undoubtedly, especially now with guilt gnawing away at her insides. Chapter 3. Cora woke with a start to Jack's hand on her shoulder, shaking her sharply.
What?
She stuttered, jolting upright, face peeling off the pages of the book on which she'd fallen asleep. She'd just about fallen asleep in her supper earlier that evening, after being exhausted by the day's training. Even the huge influx of energy the morning's blood had given her hadn't been enough to keep her awake.
I thought I didn't need to sleep, either, she'd complained at supper, earning her another barely suppressed eye roll from Antonova. What? Isn't that a thing? Vampires don't need to sleep?
Your vessel does,
Antonova replied with the air of a schoolteacher whose patience was running thin with repetition.
Vampires who are settled may avoid sleep if they wish, at the peril of incurring further wear and tear on their body. Many still choose to sleep, finding it allows the brain a certain downtime. I need not remind you that the magic of soul transference is an inexact, imprecise, and largely unresearched field, Miss Roddy. Do not run your body into the ground.
Yeah, multiple resurrections are hell on the heart, Jack jibed. And it's not like you can just take an aspirin.
Cora had grumbled, but she'd understood. She'd perked up again after dinner, however, and had in fact been so awake that she'd expected to be up all night with her nose in a book. But now here she was, being shaken awake by Jack for what felt like the millionth time.
I'll go sleep in the bed, thanks.
She pushed her chair back with a squeak. Jack shook his head.
Not this time. We're going out.
What?
You heard me. We're going out. Take off your sweater.
He was already pulling off his own sweater and folding it neatly, placing it on the chair next to Cora's. The little cottage didn't provide much in the way of privacy, but there were quilts hung up on the rafters, and normally Cora went behind those to change. Jack didn't seem to be bothering.
Take off my... I thought you said we were going out.
She blinked at him. Are you suddenly speaking a language I don't understand? Jack had now taken off his shirt as well, leaving himself in only an undershirt, and he started on his trousers.
No, and before you ask your next question, no, I have no intention of getting frisky with you either. We're going out. We're doing an exercise. Now strip down, tank top only.
You have got to be kidding me,
Cora grumbled, but she pulled her sweater over her head.
Nope, and ditch the jeans too.
She turned to him, arms still in her sweater, and her eyebrows just about hit her hairline.
It's easily 20 below out there, and you want me to take off my jeans? Are you insane?
Fine, run in the snow in wet jeans.
Jack shrugged as he slid his trousers to the floor, then bent over and picked them up to fold.
I promise, it's a mistake you'll only make once.
Cora glared at him.
I swear you've engineered this whole damn day to be as ridiculously awful as possible just to get under my skin. Are we actually going on a midnight run in our underwear in the middle of winter in Russia?
Disregarding that Russia is a very large country, and that we could go for runs in the middle of winter that would feel like summer in plenty of other countries, yes. That is what we are doing.
He said this with enough conviction that for a brief moment, Cora accepted this as unassailable, sensible fact. Then her brain kicked in again, and she gaped at him.
You're actually serious. We're actually doing this. Oh my God, I'm going to die.
Jack rolled his eyes.
Oh, quit being so melodramatic. You're not going to die.
I most certainly am, Cora informed him. I am going to shrivel up like a raisin and keel over in the snow.
Jack marched out into the snow without another word, and without hesitation, leaving Cora no choice but to follow or, presumably, be dragged out. It was, much as she'd expected, freaking cold. Jack hadn't worn socks, so Cora wasn't wearing any either, and she was already losing any feeling she had in her feet. She didn't have much grip on the snow, much less when it started melting around her and turning into slush. and there were unpleasantly sharp bits and pieces underneath it. Jack led her down the snowy path through the forest, and then off it, into the forest. He didn't slow his...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?